This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by Northwest Safe. There is a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending in Tacoma?
Tacoma Councilmember Ryan Mello plans on going after gang violence and gun violence tied to mental health by weirdly deciding to go after lawful gun owners.
In the last 30 days, we had three gun-related homicides in the city of Tacoma alone. Mm-hmm. I think in Tacoma, we're tired of just thoughts and prayers. Okay. That's not cutting it. We gotta do something.
Got it. I see he took on that talking point. We're sick of thoughts and prayers. Okay. He's sick in thoughts and prayers. So he tells Q13 that he's introducing a gun and ammo tax, very similar in a lot of ways to what we have in the Seattle area. $25 tax on all gun purchases. 2 cent per round tax on ammunition of .22 caliber and below, and then a 5 cent tax on ammo above .22 caliber.
I absolutely know that most gun owners are responsible individuals, but we need the revenue to do appropriate youth violence prevention programming. There's not one thing we're going to do that's going to curb gun violence. I think it's going to be a lot of things that we're going to do, but we can't just sit on our hands and do nothing.
So when you actually look at the kinds of gun violence that he's talking about in the Tacoma area, it's being driven by and large gang violence. We're talking about drive-by shootings. We're talking about gang members who are settling scores with each other. On top of that, yes, of course, there is the mental health aspect to all of this. But how about this? Because we're seeing an increase in gang violence in the area, number one, let's actually say that. Let's actually talk about the problem, because we've got folks all across this region taking on this. And this is a social justice argument, frankly, I don't understand. They refuse to use the term gang member. They don't want to say gang violence. They don't want to use the term gang because they think it is unfair. It gives off an image that maybe it shouldn't. I'm not entirely sure I know what image they think it gives off that is not an accurate reflection of exactly what's going on. But okay, first let's actually talk about what the problem is. So then, now that we know that gang violence is a clear problem, how do we go about going after that? How do we go about offering solutions to that? I guess you can come up with some program that will tell kids, shooting people is bad, don't do it, but that's not really going to work. And so, of course, I'm going to stand in the way of yet another tax against a group of people that are already being taxed. More resources for cops makes sense, right? Cops to go after the problem, to actually enforce the law, to break up these gang members as they're meeting. That makes sense. Now, yeah, I suppose do what Ryan Mello wants here, and hopefully he'll come on the show next week to talk about it, because it's not like I'm going to just flat out say programs that are one-off with kids is wrong, right? Let's get the details of the actual programs that he's proposing there. He didn't have any particulars, or at least the specifics in that Q13 piece, but understand that a lot of times when we're talking about gang members, we're talking about people, kids, who come from broken homes, who come from poverty, who come from single-parent homes, who come from areas where maybe the parents in their life or the adults in their life aren't taking care of them. Maybe they glorify gang violence. You're going to have to approach that problem in a slightly more intense way than a one-off assembly at an elementary school that says violence is wrong. I trust that right now you've got the resources in place to tell kids why violence is wrong, right? I don't necessarily think that's going to change because the message is going to change if you go ahead and do an assembly or a program or something. It has to be a little bit more in depth. But then, of course, you've got the suicide issue to all of this. When we're talking about gun violence, not just in the state of Washington, but across the entire country, almost two-thirds of the gun violence is due to suicides. So again, what are you going to do specifically with this money? And at the same time, you've got the people who are clearly annoyed with this, the law-abiding gun owners who don't necessarily want to have their gun purchases be more expensive. We generally, I thought, said that we shouldn't make it onerous for someone to engage in a constitutional right, except when it's guns, because they don't actually like that constitutional right. So not only are you hurting the law-abiding gun owners, but you're also hurting the gun shop owners like Dan Davies, the owner of Mary's Pistols, which is weird. It should be Dan's Pistols, but it's Mary's.
It would literally put me out of business. And that's that. That's my livelihood. I'm done. Instead of taxing guns, we need to address the mental health problems of Pierce County.
Now, I'm certainly sympathetic to that argument. I generally don't like it when people say you're going to flat out put me out of business, because that's hyperbole. The fact of the matter is it's going to be much more difficult for someone like that to sell the products that keep him in business. The ones who say automatically the sky is falling, and then when the sky doesn't fall, but let's say they are deeply damaged by the actual attacks, then we stop focusing on how bad the damage is, and we say, oh, well, you lied then. You told. This is what the left does all the time. This is what the right does, frankly, on other issues as well. So keep the hyperbole out, but I think it's fair to say that this is going to be a tax that's going to hurt a lot of people, and it's not being properly defined where the money is actually going to go. So hopefully Councilmember Ryan Mello will come on the show. He's been on the show before, so I'm hoping we can actually book him. And I don't think I yelled at him because I think I was on the same side of him, of his on Uber. He wanted to bring Uber and Lyft to Tacoma. And I think I was all like, oh, that's good. So when we ask him to come on, just remind him that we're, you know, I'm nice.
Why do you think people, do you actually think that people don't come on the show because they're afraid you're going to yell at them? Or do you think it's just you and they just don't want to talk to you?
Because I'm just like off-putting?
Yes. And
I mean, that's also part
of it. Egotistical, narcissistic.
Yeah, but I
mean, all that stuff.
I own that.
Right.
That's something that at least I own. So it's not like they're going into the interview like, oh, I'm shocked. I thought this person was something they... No, I'm telling you up front what I am. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Stuck in traffic.
So yes, traffic is actually getting worse for a lot of people. Not just the folks who live in Seattle. Of course, we knew that this was coming. We've got a lot of projects that are being considered right now that are actually underway. This is traffic that impacts everybody because bad traffic in and around Seattle, especially on I-5 through Seattle, through Capitol Hill, through South Lake, like that impacts absolutely everyone who's just trying to get from point A to B, even if they want nothing to do with Seattle. Now, the average Seattle commuter wastes about 78 hours a year stuck in traffic, according to a new Texas A&M mobility report. 78 hours a year stuck in traffic that they otherwise could be used spending time with their loved ones, something I don't understand because no one loves me. But that, for me, 78 hours, I could be doing things that make me happy, like angry tweet. These are things that you can actually be spending hours on and know you're stuck in your car listening to me, which actually that's good. This amounts to about $1,000 a year spent on gas and other personal costs. This is a problem. And then when you look at the ranking, Seattle, which is a relatively small city in the grand scheme of things, ranks 7th in the entire country for the number of hours we waste in traffic every single year.
You know, just a lot. Like, I'm not able to really, like, do more with my mornings.
That's a totally useless comment. That's why I love Man on the Street audio. That one courtesy of King 5. We've got a traffic czar. Do you remember that? The announcement that we have a traffic czar. His actual title is Director of Citywide Mobility Operations Coordination, but traffic czar sounds better. Do you know his name?
No.
I didn't know his name. I had to look it up. Michael Warden. Have we heard anything coming from this dude since he was hired several months ago?
Nothing from Warden.
Did we get a press release of what he's up to? Do we get any media availability? Because traffic is getting worse. He's supposed to be there to actually help all the moving parts. I kind of assumed, as most people did when they announced this publicly, that this was going to be a sort of public-facing position. I have no idea what Michael Warden looks like, sound like, or what he does. I literally have no idea what he's doing.
Mike.
Is that a crazy thing? You've hired the person. You're paying him a lot of money. I'm assuming that he's getting mid-six figures. Well, what exactly is he doing? Because right now we've got ranked number 7 in the country. They're doing repaving on Aurora this weekend, which is going to make traffic worse. They're continuing the viaduct demolition, which, oh, lo and behold, Laura Newbern, spokesperson for WatchDot. Yeah, the whole viaduct construction thing, she tells Q13, it's going to go a little bit longer than we anticipated.
It's a dynamic situation. So as the contractor moves, roads close. And as they clean up, roads open. So people really need to make sure that they're in the know and that they stay informed. We've said that the demolition would be completed by summer. Now we're saying the bulk of demolition will be completed by summer.
Isn't it weird how we can just change things when we don't meet the deadlines and then not have any consequences whatsoever? It's like, yeah, I was going to start the show at 3 o'clock, which is what I'm supposed to do. Didn't feel like it.
You want to push it?
Just push it. I'll come in next maybe Wednesday, but I'm going to get paid exactly the same, right? Oh, I am? Okay, cool. That's not how it works in the real world. I'd get fired in a heartbeat. And yet, when it comes to WatchDot, all of a sudden, with this disastrous plan that, of course, to be fair, everyone knew was going to go really, really long. No consequences. Everyone still has a job. Everyone still has a job in all of this. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-877. Why don't you weigh in on this topic or any topic? Don't forget, you can follow along on Facebook. I would really appreciate it if you give me a like. In fact, if you go to the Facebook page right now, you will see a very fun video having to do with Jay Inslee not becoming the next presidential nominee from the Democratic Party. Shocking, I know. We made a very fun video. It has to do with a participation trophy. If you want to check it out, facebook.com/JasonRantsShow, or just text the keyword Facebook to 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at the movies?
It's Friday. You know what that means? It means I get to talk movies thanks to our wonderful sponsors in Alpine Specialty Cleaning at alpineclean.com. The big weekend release is Angel Has Fallen, the follow-up to Olympus Has Fallen and London Has Fallen. Those films focus on Secret Service agent Mike Manning, played by Gerard Butler, as he protected the president from terrorists. But this time, the bad guys try to kill the new president, played by Morgan Freeman, pinning the attempt on Manning.
There's been an assassination attempt on the president.
Mike Manning, you're being charged with the attempted murder of the president of the United States.
The president's top guardian angel has fallen.
Don't you see that I'm being set up?
You have a collect call from Mike.
Body's cold, time is frozen.
We've been getting death threats.
There's somebody else behind us. It wasn't me.
The president's not safe. Then you try and finish the job. And I'm not going to stop until I prove who did this.
How did you find me?
I want security for the president. How do you think, Dad? I need your help.
Angel Has Fallen delivers exactly what you expect it to, and I mean exactly. I knew who the bad guys were in the first 10 minutes, making the reveal pretty underwhelming, and the action sequence roll out almost exactly the way you expect them to. However, I loved it. This movie doesn't pretend to be anything other than a fun political action thriller. And everything falls into the exact box that it's supposed to fall into. It does exactly what you want it to do. I don't need this movie to have nuanced character development. I don't need it to have a confusing plot and big reveals. I don't even need it to have particularly brilliant dialogue. Not in a movie like this. I need a good action movie. I need a fun plot. I need a few funny one-liners or short sequences here or there, and it absolutely delivers. This is not a movie for critics. It's why they mostly hate it. This is a movie for the audience, and if you like action shoot 'em up films, and especially if you like the previous two movies in the franchise, you're going to like Angel Has Fallen. I did. I loved it, and I recommend it. The other weekend release is a smaller one. It's also available on video on demand starting today. It's called Hot Air, and it caught my attention because it's about a reigning conservative talk radio show host in New York whose life is turned upside down when his 16-year-old niece shows up during a family crisis.
Get ready for the Lyle McComb Show. Lyle McComb is fired up.
Oh, you're so hot, Lyle.
Greetings, friends, patriots. You're listening to Fired Up. I'm your host, Lionel McComb, your humble steward, your deliverer of hard truths, a beacon of light in a dark harbor. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled messes. Bring me your overtaxed, your underlaid, your put down, your fed up. Bring me your rage.
This is a film that doesn't quite understand radio, and that drives me absolutely mad. It is maddening how little they know about an actual radio studio and just the formatics of radio. But I understand that this is a movie and they're not necessarily in it to be an accurate portrayal of what it is we do. I'll just say that kind of rubs me the wrong way. The problem here is the cast is undoubtedly talented. I think they're actually really good, but they're working with lifeless material and it doesn't connect emotionally the way that it desperately wants it to. The film ends up feeling hollow and lifeless most of the time. And as a consequence, you don't really care about any of the characters and you definitely don't care about their struggles. It's just not connecting emotionally, I don't think, with audience members. It certainly did it with me. Hot Air is not especially good. I suppose it's somewhat relevant to our current political climate, but that's kind of it. I do not recommend it. What movie are you going to see this weekend? Send me a text on the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline, 1-800-465-8770. You're going to take my advice and see Angel Has Fallen, or are you going to check out something else, maybe on Netflix? Text me, 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Wait, what?
So I just got an email coming from our animal prison, Woodland Park Zoo, and I posted a photo along with the story that I think might help it make a little bit more sense in your head. I just posted it on Twitter at twitter.com/JasonRants. Apparently, Gunner, a free-flying ambassador animal, was flying in a training session yesterday afternoon when, instead of returning to the keeper, Gunner decided to veer off and find a perch off of zoo property. Gunner is a huge eagle. Like, it's massive. And they say staff have been watching him like a hawk, pun intended. And will continue to do so until he decides to fly back to the zoo. He says, as Gunner is a free-flying animal, he has on occasion decided to land on objects outside of his training course, but always returns to his keepers. Gunner poses no risk to our neighbors in the community. This is the biggest eagle I think I've ever seen, and it looks dangerous and vicious, and it's going to kill us all. And I'm supposed to believe that it's not going to pose a danger to anyone? Did you see the size of this thing?
Yeah.
Its wingspan is greater than that of a human being.
Okay. Question. How many times have you seen stories, whether it be Como, Q13, mm-hmm. Cairo, of eagles swooping down and killing people?
I've seen animals that are not supposed to kill, kill.
Okay. Bald eagles.
This is not a bald eagle.
Any eagle.
I've seen, when I've been to Seahawks game, I've seen the eagle that they used to have, or the Seahawk, whatever the hell it is.
Right.
And it gets a little bit too close to people. And then the trainers, I can see it in their eyes, are wondering, oh my God, is this the time that it's finally going to get its first victim?
Okay.
Like, I can literally see the fear in them. And then, weirdly, I sometimes see the mascot, the guy who's in the, or woman, whoever's in it, mm-hmm. getting a little bit too aggressive sometimes with fans.
Okay, but what are the odds? Let's
I'm
say
not,
it's
I'm
possible.
I'm not saying that the odds are high. I'm simply saying this idea that Gunner poses absolutely no risk whatsoever to the neighborhood, given how vicious looking this eagle is just a little off-putting to me.
Okay.
I feel like this is the whole idea of when an asteroid's going to hit Earth and we're all going to die and there's nothing we can do about it. My expectation is that the government is going to say, oh, don't worry, it's not a big deal, because it doesn't want us to all panic. There's nothing really that we can do. And so this is what we're dealing with here. There's nothing that we can do. If Gunner decides to go ahead and take out a bunch of children, eat their eyes or whatever, claw them out, there's nothing really that can be done. So it's just a disinformation campaign.
Okay, so you're just judging an individual based on its looks.
Well, it's not an individual. And first of all, it makes sense to judge things based on looks sometimes, because a book does weirdly tell a lot by its cover. I'm just saying, it's a scary-looking bird. Have you seen the eagle?
I've seen the eagle.
Okay.
It looks like an eagle.
Okay, are you legitimately telling me that it's not scary-looking at all?
It's
like a little baby seal. So adorable. Just go up to it, give it a little tap on the head, and think it's cute, rub its belly. You can't do that with this thing. It's monstrous. And it's going to kill us all. Text, look at the photo. Text the keyword Twitter to 1-800-465-8770. Do it right now. Text the keyword Twitter to 1-800-465-8770. Look at the image of this bird. And by the way, this is the animal prison sending out photos, right? They could have picked a nice little cute photo of the little eagle laying on its back, having someone rub its tummy. I'm assuming you'd do that with birds too. I don't actually know. But instead, they give this, like, really, truly scary-looking bird with its wingspan clawing down on one of the trainers.
Okay.
We're all going to die.
You have a weird perception of wildlife.
Oh, you're so tough. Oh, look at me. I can take on eagles.
No, I would never need to take on an eagle.
No,
because
yeah,
they fly in the sky.
They're all just really simple. That's why the trainer has a huge glove on, because the talons...
Okay.
They don't really do anything. In fact, they just is a little ticklish. Just a little tickles, right?
Okay.
1-800-465-8770. Text the keyword Twitter and I'll send you a link specifically to this photo. Just click the first link that pops up. Look at all these people are texting in because they realize the danger that they're in and that they're all lying at the Woodland Park Zoo. Oh, it's not a big deal. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Thank you for the text, Tom, in the 360. How many times did Siegfried and Roy perform their show before the worst happened? You haven't heard or seen from them since. Just throwing that out there. Including, by the way, the Tigers or the Lions or whatever it was. 1-800-465-877. When we come back, the New York Times has this weird puff piece that pretends that we've got, in Seattle, the drug situation under control. We're going to go through this ridiculous claim when we come back. You've been listening to What's Trending, brought to you by KeelMortgage.com. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show, live in the Online Trading Academy studio on this Friday afternoon. There was a piece that came out in the New York Times today. It's basically a puff piece. It's an op-ed. And it has a really silly title, I think. And ultimately, it doesn't really develop into anything of substance, at least for those of us who understand what it's like living in King County, in particular in Seattle. It's a puff piece for Dan Satterberg, King County prosecutor. And it's a puff piece for the ideas and programs that he backs by an author who actually supports the ideas that Dan Satterberg backs. He supports heroin injection sites. He supports these progressive ideas that don't have a lot of data to back them up, but it doesn't matter. When does data actually matter when we're talking about positions that people take pushing specifically ideologies rather than things that actually might work or make sense? You know, it's getting a lot of play nationally. In fact, I was on the Ben Shapiro show earlier today. You can hear it tonight at 7:50. I was on with him talking about this story. It's titled, Seattle Has Figured Out How to End the War on Drugs, which is kind of interesting because, I mean, I guess they have. Technically, that's true. How do you end the war on drugs? You literally just stop prosecuting drug users and drug dealers. And lo and behold, the war on drugs is actually over. But the op-ed presents what I think is a rosy picture of the situation in King County because the author simply wants to promote these positions. And as a result of that, he's got on some massive blind spots, massive blinders to the consequence of these types of policies. Now, a good portion of the piece highlights Dan Satterberg's decision not to charge what he believes to be low-level drug offenders for carrying heroin, for carrying meth, for carrying other drugs. He doesn't want them in jail. He wants them in treatment. And consequently, he almost never charges criminals, criminal addicts, I suppose, in this case. The preference being this pricey, but very effective, undoubtedly effective drug treatment program that the author weirdly lauds as, quote, a huge success before then admitting, and this is in the same story, he says, it's a huge success. And then later on, all the way at the bottom, quote, it's too early to have reliable data from the decriminalization experiment. Now, treatment is usually my preference as well. We're going to talk a little bit about how Everett is doing this in the next hour. But treatment is my preference. I mean, it depends on the circumstances, right? I would prefer if we got one person who's clearly an addict. This is the first time they've had any interaction with police, with the justice system. And we say, you know what, we're not going to throw the book at you. We're not going to throw you in jail. We're going to put you in treatment because we understand, number one, of course, it's cheaper to deal with it that way. And number two, because it's the right thing to do. We're all better. You're better. Our society is better treating people with addiction. But in cases of people who either don't want the help or choose not to take on the program in a meaningful way so they're not actually succeeding, I mean, at some point, if you've been given dozens of chances, your crime actually has to be punished, and I no longer have the same sympathy for you that I did back at the beginning of this experiment. Now, the article barely approaches the consequences of Satterberg's approach here. Consequences that you and I who live in the area, or who even just visit the area, we see all the time. We see this all the time. Cops now have little leverage over drug dealers and over pimps, because another part of the story tackles the idea of prostitution. And we know that, especially if you live near Aurora, lots of prostitutes walking up and down the streets, and they're doing it with a banner, and they're doing it in open, like in daylight. 2 o'clock, you'll see a whole bunch of people there. The reason why they're doing it is because cops now have no leverage over them. They can't interact with someone who's dealing drugs or who's selling drugs, or excuse me, who's taking drugs, who's caught with a small level of drugs on them. They can't say, hey, you know what? I'm going to prosecute you. I'm going to arrest you. Dan Satterberg is going to prosecute you. We're going to throw you in jail for a very long time unless you tell me where you're getting your drugs. The person who's way above you that you're getting your drugs from. Or in some cases, the pimp that's exploiting you. Unless you give me those details so I can go after them, I'm going to arrest you. Right now, and if you talk to any cop, and we talk to a lot of cops here, they will tell you they don't have that anymore because every single person that they interact with on the street knows truly that the chances of them getting arrested are incredibly low. And let's say they do, in fact, get arrested. They know that they're not going to be charged. People in this area know that they're not going to be charged. And so there's no incentive for them to participate, cooperate with police. And so here's what that actually means. Let's say you get this person to go through the system, go through this detox program, this drug treatment program. Awesome. It's successful. It may take a few months. It may be very expensive, but ultimately it works. Great. That person that you just cured them of their addiction, treated them for their addiction, just being replaced by another person because you haven't actually gotten the drugs off the streets. Because the bad guys who've got all the drugs, who are flooding our neighborhoods with drugs, they're still out there. It's harder to catch them because we're not giving tools to the cops to do their jobs. And so this is a never-ending cycle. We cure someone, we treat someone, then we've got another addict that we're going to put through the system. So at the end of the day, it's not actually cheaper because we're not going after the root cause. Snohomish County figured this out. Their prosecutor had the same exact policy as King County's prosecutor. And they said, you know what, actually, I've been talking with the cops. They're telling me they have no incentive now, these criminals, to listen to the police, to give information that we desperately need in order to go after the root problem. So we're going to actually start charging people in certain circumstances. We're going to make it known that the bad guys on the streets know that, no, you can't come in to Snohomish County. You can't hang out in Everett or Marysville or Sultan. You can't come here and commit these acts, these criminal acts, and expect that you're not going to get prosecuted. We're changing that now. Now, the author of this New York Times piece doesn't like that approach. He doesn't like that approach at all. And it's very clear from the article that he has this bias. He's someone who says the thing that I support actually works. And it reads as if he is trying to prove a position he already holds. That's a kind of bias that you have to be aware of. Now, to be fair, I have a bias as well, right? I'm pro-cop. I'm pro-law enforcement. I'm in the literal sense, enforcing the law. I support that. So then let's actually look at the data, because I've got the data in front of me. In fact, right before I went on vacation in July, we got an email coming from King County Health. And it detailed some of the data on the ground last year as it relates to drug overdose deaths. And look at this. This is so weird. Drug overdose death increased year over year. We saw an incredibly sharp uptick in meth-related overdose deaths to the point where we can probably now say that we have an epidemic of methamphetamine, which is something that wasn't as serious a couple years ago. Do not tell me that is indicative of a successful end to the war on drugs. Because the drugs, they're still in people's systems. Addicts are still out there. Addicts are still dying. Drugs still being sold. You're just not charging them. That's success? Maybe to the New York Times. Maybe to Dan Satterberg. But that's not success to me. And I'm going to assume it's not success to you. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to weigh in on this topic. 1-800-465-8770. Send me a text message. Welcome back to the Jason Rancho, live in the Online Trading Academy studio. We talked yesterday about a pretty disgusting and vile comment, an attack by a guy named Hassan Piker. He is one of the voices over at the Young Turks. Young Turks is a progressive YouTube channel. It's run by Cenk Unger. And the attacks were against Congressman Dan Crenshaw. I don't want to play them again because, frankly, there are so many bleeps. It's just annoying. And it's just, it was vile. He made a number of comments, including, we deserved 9/11, and that Dan Crenshaw, the congressman from Texas, who lost his eye in an IED attack, that he actually lost his eye due to a sexual act that was done against him by a terrorist. It was disgusting, this rant that he went on. And so last night, he did an interview with Schenck over at the Young Turks. And at first, it was just, you kind of knew where it was going. You got a little bit of pushback, I guess, from Schenck, but this is how he defends the 9/11 comments.
You understand now, and not just now, but you understood fairly soon after you said it, that saying Americans deserve 9/11 is a completely different statement and one that's wrong.
No, I didn't say Americans deserve 9/11. I said America deserves 9/11.
Right, but that's
and
still
in that
wrong.
Moment, well, maybe you can chalk it up to English being my second language or whatever you want to chalk it up to.
No. We're going to chalk it up to you being an idiot. That's what we'll chalk it up to. We'll chalk it up to you not knowing what the hell it is you're talking about. That's what we'll chalk it up to. It has nothing to do with English not being your second language. You're speaking English just fine. I understand absolutely everything you're saying it and the intent behind
obviously,
it.
Obviously, if I followed that statement up immediately with, well, we're still continuing to fund the nation state responsible for this, and we act like they are our greatest allies, when that kind of arms sale...
I understand the overall policy point you're making, Hassan, but saying it that way is clearly wrong.
Oh, thank you so much for passionately calling out your nephew in all of this. And then they get into the comments made about Representative Crenshaw, and it seems pretty clear they don't know basic definition of words.
You know, I guess an attempt at satire made very crass comments about the eye that he lost in Afghanistan. So first of all, at least everyone is assuming it's satire, including Dan Crenshaw. I'll quote him in a second.
Dan Crenshaw does not believe that this is satire. I don't think they know the meaning of the term satire. I'm not entirely sure I understand what was satirical about saying a terrorist sexually assaulted him to the point of losing an eye. What point are you trying to make there? What's the context of his views that you're trying to make a point about if we're going to pretend that this is actual satire?
Satire.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I don't think that the Mujahideen are actually brave. That was simply a reference to exact John Rambo 3, first and foremost, a very famous reference to John Rambo 3 that featured this movie is dedicated to the brave Mujahideen soldiers of Afghanistan. And on top of that, it was a reference to the fact that Ronald Reagan also considered them to be brave when he was arming them. When he escalated the arms that were, when he increased the amount of funding and training and arms and Stinger missiles that we were giving to these groups.
Oh, okay. That was satirical. But what about the sexual assault joke? That wasn't, or that was also in Rambo 3? Because I didn't see Rambo 3. So maybe I missed that part. Got it. And Representative Crenshaw, for his point, he calls out Hassan Piker on Fox News.
Wow, he was triggered, wasn't he? I mean, that is the definition of a leftist getting triggered. Doesn't like what he's hearing. He disagrees with it. Doesn't understand foreign policy. Mentioned something about being 12 years old. Yeah, I have almost 12 years of experience actually deploying overseas. So maybe that's what he meant when he said 12 years. I don't know. But he clearly doesn't know much. And when you don't know much about foreign policy, you get really mad when people disagree with you. And if you can't argue your point, you tend to insult people. And man, that is exactly the outrage culture that we have right now. He is a perfect example of it. You know, he's trying to walk his comments back now. You know, good on him for trying to do that.
Is it good on him for trying to do that? He's walking them back a little bit, but barely. I mean, he didn't walk back the comments in the interview that he did with Schenck Unger. He didn't walk back those comments. In a lot of ways, he doubled down. He doubled down on his policy prescriptions or his policy criticisms there. He didn't admit that saying America deserved 9/11. He defended it. He said, oh, no, I didn't mean Americans. I meant America. You know, English is my second language, but, you know, I think I'm saying the right thing. No, he didn't back down on anything. And, of course, there's no consequences for this kind of thing. Just imagine for a moment if it was Brett Baer on Fox News who made these comments. It was Tucker Carlson or Laura Ingraham or Sean Hannity. They made anywhere close to these comments. There would be calls for boycotts immediately. We would be talking about how just another example of all of those Nazis at Fox News going against the troops. They claim to care about the troops, but they really don't. Look at this disgusting nonsense. Don't advertise there. We would get the Media Matters attack, the Sleeping Giants attack, but silence here.
No, no, not at all. And what I was going to say is it reflects a very deep anti-Americanism. That is inherent in some of these left-wing politics. I mean, when you say America deserved 9/11, you know, he's trying to say, well, that's not what I meant. He said it was our fault, though. Okay, so not a big difference. Well, again, but he doesn't understand history, doesn't understand foreign policy, so he can't actually make an argument to connect those two things. And then he basically says that the only reason I'm making the argument is because I lost my eye. I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
Imagine just for a moment. Just for a moment, I really want you to think about whether or not this is getting the same level of treatment that it would get if someone else said it. Why does he get a pass? Now, I'm okay if we want to give people passes for content, including if it is satire or not. I don't care. I just want some level of consistency. And we're not getting it. We never seem to get it. It is okay, apparently, to go after Dan Crenshaw, a hero, a vet. It's okay to go after him because he has an R next to his name. Because he believes politically speaking, at least, things we disagree with. So I guess it's okay to go after him. But by the way, you go after one single policy prescription of Hillary Clinton, you're a sexist. You say a policy coming from Obama was wrong, you're immediately decried as a racist. Yet you go after Dan Crenshaw here. Oh, no, it's satire. I wasn't speaking out against an American veteran. No, it was satire. The left loves to redefine words. They redefine basic words. And they do it to give themselves a pass. And folks on the left like to give them that pass because they don't like consistency. They like to play unfair because they can't argue the basic facts of their positions. They couldn't get into an argument on foreign policy with Dan Crenshaw. So what do? They go ahead and put out this filth. That's exactly what it is. And no, he shouldn't get a pass, but okay, he will. The world we now live in. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. It's the Jason Rand Show.